Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
My next guest gives Second Chance a whole new meaning, and she wraps up our second I Am Second series here on Open House. Annie Lobert has lived a life many of us probably can't fathom. But it's not so much about the life she's lived, it's about how she broke free of it, to find endless love, to find God. Annie embarked on a lifelong quest for love and acceptance. She spent more than a decade in the sex industry. She was trafficked. She beat cancer and drug addiction. Then she took her transformation one step further and founded Hookers for Jesus, a not-for-profit organization reaching out to the women she left behind, suffering physically, emotionally, spiritually. I do warn, this conversation is not for the faint-hearted, but I guarantee you'll see life in a whole new dimension. Annie Lobert, welcome to Open House.
Hi, I'm so glad to be here.
So glad to have you on the program, Annie. Annie, as I said, as you grew up, you say you were looking for love and acceptance.
I was. In a family, the mother and father element is so important. And especially for a little girl like I was, that the father part of our growing up wasn't the normal father that you would think of as a family unit. My dad was very distant. He was in the military. He was also a former alcoholic. And so he was a very angry man, and he would come home from work and rage. And he also was very strict with us kids growing up. I had two brothers and a sister. Disciplinary actions really affected me and the words that he spoke over my life. I remember him saying things like, "I'm stupid. I'll never amount to anything. What am I dumb? What am I doing that for? And can't I get better grades?" And I remember as a little girl just feeling this emptiness and this void inside of my heart and the deepest part of my soul, longing for someone to admonish me and tell me that I was beautiful and that I was loved and that I was worth something more than life itself.
It's amazing how that endured all that desire for love and acceptance.
You know what? It is. I think that we are born with this desire to want to be accepted and loved and purposeful. And I think that if we don't get that as a child, we will do other things and we'll search out different ways of living to try to fill in that dark space of a vacuum inside of our heart that's not being filled.
You sought love and acceptance in one particular boyfriend, which commenced a spiral for you, really, didn't it?
I really felt like the type of romance that I wanted in my life needed to be like a Disney movie. I think all little girls can relate to this. I'm going to laugh right now because women were just so romantic, and I'm not saying men can't be, but we are just outwardly romantic and inwardly romantic, and we love the long wedding dress, and we love the engagement and the beautiful shoes that go with it. We love the roses, we love the courtship, we love the dancing, and when we get that, it's like our whole world turns into some magical kingdom inside of our mind, and we really believe that our lives will forever be happily ever after. The prince has shown up on his beautiful white horse, and he's, you know, picking us up in a beautiful carriage, and we don't have to let it stroke midnight to lose our carriage. We can just be like that for the rest of our lives. And I think I felt like I was Cinderella in a way, because I felt like I needed to run away from my family to live my life in the way that I felt it needed to be lived, which is happy. And so when I met him, I didn't realize that he was seeing three other women at the time, and he had an appetite for women. And when I found out that he was sleeping with three of my friends in my school, I was devastated. And we were going steady. It's what they call it in high school. I don't know what they call it in Australia, but that's what they call it in America. You're going steady.
Yes.
And so when he broke my heart, it's basically, it was my choice to get into the relationship. But I remember coming home, and I remember that's like one of the first days I actually inhaled a cigarette because I was so upset. And my mom said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "You know, I broke up with so-and-so." And she said, "Annie, you wear your heart on your sleeve. You need to learn a lot about life." My mom was just very encouraging, and she's always been a sweetheart to me. And she cried with me, and I told her, "I'm never going to love anyone ever again. Couldn't have the space in my heart to do it."
So what happened to you from then, Annie?
Well, I left high school very proud, very angry, very revengeful, and I think that the instinctive revenge was probably towards my father. Now, I'm not here to bash my father. We have made up. We have reconciled, and I love my daddy, and he loves Jesus. We have a great relationship now, but back then I was so mad at him. I figured, hey, I'm going to get this job, and I'm going to have this nice place to live and a nice car. And so that was my excuse to go to have three of those jobs, and naturally, I overworked myself. I mean, who wouldn't? You're working three different jobs at 60 to 80 hours a week. So my girlfriend and I decided to go out to the nightclubs, and I was 18, and in the United States, it's 21 to get into the clubs. And, of course, we had fake IDs, and we were sitting there one night, and these men came in with these beautiful mink coats and fox furs on with beautiful Rolex watches on, walked into the club. They offered to buy us drinks, and I told my girlfriend, these guys have money. And I have never had money in my life like that. And it fascinated me. Kind of, I grew up on MTV. I grew up on reading Vogue magazine, Cosmopolitan, looking at all the beautiful things in the magazines, wishing and wanting that it could be somehow mine and that somehow that would be my identity, that I was a rich girl that was smart, that had her own business. So my girlfriend takes off with one of the guys, and she calls me from Hawaii. And we all love Hawaii, right? Everybody wants to go to Hawaii one day. I had never even been there. So she said, hey, why don't you come to Hawaii, take a vacation. I want to show you what I'm doing. And she was actually selling her body. And I flew to Hawaii a couple days later. And the first night that I worked, I sold myself. And it sounds so nonchalant because prior to this setup of me selling myself, I had gotten date raped in more times than I could count at parties and going out to the clubs. Different men that I was with, it's basically I'd wake up and not know what happened because of drinking and smoking pot and whatever else I was doing. So I was very jaded on really honestly thinking that sex was anything special. It was like, hey, I might as well get paid for it. I think that's what a lot of women think, and they justify themselves when they sell themselves, because if they've been abused sexually by someone, raped, and I was at 8 and 9 by a good family friend, I think everything was coming to fruition inside my heart where I didn't care anymore.
So nothing jarred on you to suddenly find yourself as a paid escort in Hawaii?
Actually, it was glamorous. I was like, whoa, this is cool. I can trick men, I can get their money, and I can, like, take their money and run. And that's what the game was. Thousands of dollars, get the money. You don't always have to have sex. You could trick them sometimes, and you could say, I'm going to do this, but you don't do it, and then you run out the room. I mean, this is the thing. All escorts, we all have different ways of getting the money. This is how it was in my past anyway. And when I got back to Minnesota, I quit all three of my jobs. I started working escort services in Minnesota, and I was moonlighting at strip clubs working as well. And that's when the man that I thought I would never meet walked in. He was very handsome. He was very charming. Okay, if you want to throw some charm on, this man had it. He had everything, and he was good looking, and he said the right things, and he, held my hand a certain way, and he took me dancing. He bought me roses and clothes and bought me a beautiful ring and said, I love you. And I basically believed every word he said. And what I didn't realize at the time was, even though I was a high-class escort, a strip girl, whatever it was, I truly believed that, what I was doing was okay, and that I could share that information with him, and he wouldn't think anything of it. And it was true. When I told him the story, hey, I do stuff on the side for money, and I'm trying to get paid so I can get my own business one day. And he was like, oh, man, that is so awesome. You're pretty smart. You're intelligent. You're just what I was looking for. And see, he was doing drugs, and I did not like it. I was totally against drugs, even though I had only done pot in my life. I didn't want anything else to hinder him because I loved him. So I said, hey, let's go to Vegas, because my girlfriend had moved to Las Vegas. And so the first night that I came to Vegas, I went out, worked my night, got my money, came back, put my purse down on the counter, and he said, break yourself. Now, if anyone knows hip-hop culture, we know what that means. And since I was a huge fan of hip-hop back then, one of the first rappers that started talking about pimping and prostitution was Too Short. And so I was like, excuse me, Frank, what? I'm not giving you anything. I was really sassy. I was against pimps. I would have never paid anyone. But that night he took me out to the back and started beating me brutally, broke my nose in several places. My ribs got kicked in, broken. There was blood everywhere. Like, he's screaming at me saying, this is pimping, B. This is what time it is. And if you try to leave me, I'll come and find you. And, you know, I was so shocked and I was so broken that someone that I thought could really love me and give me everything that I needed was actually going to abuse me and use me. And he threw me into a room. He took everything away from me and then came into the room where it was dark and had ice and bandages and started kissing my face. And he started crying, saying, see what you made me do to you? You know, I don't want to do this to you, but you made me. You know, I love you. You made me crazy. You know, if you just stay in pocket, that's what they call it in the pimp game. You stay in pocket, I won't do this to you. And believe it or not, I stayed with him for years. Wow. And he had other girls. He had other women that he was pimping out, sex trafficking. And I'm stuck in this relationship. I'm the bottom girl. That's the main girl in the stable. That's what they call it. And I'm in love with this guy, but I want to leave.
Why did you stay?
And I stayed because I loved him and I was scared to death for my life. For a woman to stay with someone if she loves him and he does brutal things to her like what was being done to me, because I got beat on a regular basis.
But you did escape, finally.
I did escape, by the grace of God, through several different kidnappings. I escaped. I basically gave him every single dime and surrendered everything I ever made. So I walked away with nothing, and I was stuck in the industry because I wanted to make that money back. And I stayed in the industry for several more years after that. I was in the industry a total of 16 years, 10 years, 11 years straight, and then the rest of the 4 years off and on. So I finally did get out, and I was working a regular job again. I had a client rescue me out, just like Pretty Woman, and I learned a brand new trade, and we had a great, successful business in Japan together here in the States, and then it failed. And here I was in a $1 million home. I had 4 cars in my garage, nice jewelry, beautiful clothes again, but this time I wasn't selling my body. And I basically had to lose everything overnight again. And that's when I turned to cocaine and pills. And I had already gone through cancer. I didn't really talk about that at this point, but I had gotten cured of cancer. I had cancer, Hodgkin's lymphoma, for 2 years. And I had lost my hair. My pimp cut my hair off for the first time, and then I lost my hair during chemotherapy. And I just felt so robbed. Like, at this point in my life, I had lost 2 different types of businesses in a period of 16 years, and I was devastated. Like, I felt like the whole world was caving in upon me, and to do drugs was my answer. Let's get that pain to go way deep down where I can't feel it anymore. Let's get myself numb. Let's crawl over to wherever I'm at and just try to survive. I had severe post-traumatic stress disorder, and I didn't even realize it.
Beyond the drugs, there must have been something else that kept you going through this, though.
Well, I was raised in church, and I basically went to Sunday school, but the kind of church I went to was very legalistic. It's a type of denomination where it's kind of like when you walk into the church, it's like a funeral. You can figure that one out, right?
Great.
There's no life.
Great.
And God is angry, and there's no grace, and Jesus is a nice guy, and that's what I learned. But I always remembered if I needed help, I needed to cry out Jesus' name. So there was a night that I was probably about 95 pounds. I was just a bone and basically living on the street, had nothing, sold my car for drugs. And I took a hit of the cocaine because at this point I was smoking it. And I fell back. And what I didn't know at the time was I was having a major heart attack. And wow. I literally saw my funeral. It was just like my whole life and the movie of my life. It sounds like a cliche, but it showed before my eyes. And it's blind, though, but I could see this vision. And I saw my family and I saw my friends looking at my coffin. And I saw them saying she was just a prostitute. And I wanted to get up and I wanted to pull that girl out of the coffin and say, wake up, don't die, wake up. And honestly, I cried out, I said, Jesus, please save gave me, and I gave Jesus a promise that I have kept to this day. That was August 2nd, 2003. And I told Jesus, I said, I will never sell myself again for money, for sex. And I will never do drugs again. And I walked away from that lifestyle at that moment. And God took me in his arms. He rocked me. And he held me. And I finally felt that I had found what I was looking for, which was unconditional love and acceptance of a father and a best friend and a husband all in one. And that's really what brought me to my knees, is that love. And it wasn't just a feeling. It was a knowing deep inside my spirit that God is alive and that he is real and that Jesus really did die on that cross for me. And what really blew my mind is reading the New Testament and the Old Testament about the different prostitutes, about Rahab, about Tamar, about the woman at the well, about the woman in adultery, and the woman that was at Jesus' feet, anointing his feet with her tears and the perfume. And it just blew my mind that he loves us, girls, so much.
And the turnaround in your life was both sudden and complete, absolute.
It was. And I'm not going to say that I was perfect and ready to go preach the gospel and go rescue girls. You know, there was a process for me to get that inner healing that he was walking me out. Now, remember, I had post-traumatic stress disorder. And I didn't even know it. I found out probably about 5 years ago when I read the symptoms. I was like, oh, my gosh, I had that. Nightmares on a daily basis. Every single night, like clockwork, screaming nightmares where I would see men walking towards me, trying to choke me, trying to kill me. So that's what my lifestyle was like. Besides my pimp beating me, the tricks were hurting me as well. And basically in 2005, I was cleaning my house, as crazy as that sounds, and I kept asking Jesus, I want to see your face. I want to see your face. I was praying to him, Lord, I'm ready. What do you want me to do? This love I had in me was so strong. There was no way I could have kept it as a selfish person to myself. And I had this dream about Jesus, and he came to me, and he didn't say a word. He showed me his face, and he held me in his arms, and I looked into his eyes, and he read every single day and chapter of the book of my life and told me that he loved me. He said, I want you to go back out there, and I want you to go tell my daughters, my royal princess daughters, that I love them. And tell them while they're in slavery, sex slavery, that I love them and I have a plan for their life. And so that's how Hookers for Jesus started. I started reaching out to the women in 2005. So it was about 2 years after I got healed and delivered. We've been going strong ever since. We just got a brand new property with two houses on it. We're actually getting furniture installed right now and sprinklers, and we are getting ready to take some new residents into our home soon. Destiny House.
So what's Hookers for Jesus done for the women to whom you've reached out?
Hookers for Jesus, our ministry, has given women hope in Jesus Christ. It has introduced the gospel of Christ to all these people and all these women that are caught in slavery. And what we do is we have weekly meetings and studies, and life studies for the women that are getting out of prostitution and sex trafficking. And, of course, we have the Destiny House to rescue women away from their traffickers and if they want to actually just get out of the lifestyle. And we have groups where we go to church and we do outings with them. We go and eat with them. We hang out. We counsel them. We refer them to resources for doctors, for dentists, and counseling. And we basically have a relationship with the women.
Is it dangerous work to do, Annie?
Absolutely, yes, because we're on the front lines. We're not just an agency that brings awareness. And I know there's many out there, and God bless them all. Thank you for all the agencies out there, by the way. On behalf of Hookers for Jesus, thank you to all who are listening, because whoever is doing something about sex trafficking, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. And I commend you for stepping up to the plate to help these girls. You know, I'm blown away by the love that we're being shown by the communities and the different countries and the churches and the governments and the schools and the colleges and just people in general. I'm just blown away.
Annie, why did you commit yourself to the I Am Second movement? What's that meant for you?
Oh, man, I Am Second, I love them because it's exactly who we are supposed to be. God is first and we are second. They have everyone on their videos from all different walks of life. There is no distinction between the rich girl or the poor girl. They'll have prostitutes on there, athletes, stars, people that have came from the street, drug dealers, gang members, prison people. I think it's one of the greatest movements right now in Christianity is I Am Second. And I love them. And they've been so supportive with Hookers for Jesus. They have helped us spread the message of the redemption in Christ. And that's the main focus of our agency. It is to hook people for Christ, which is our outreach, to help them transition out of their lifestyle and to heal them emotionally, spiritually, and physically.
And I'm so glad we've been able to be part of getting that message out as well. Annie Lobert, thank you so much indeed for joining us.
You're
on
welcome.
Open House. Such
God
a treat.
Bless you guys for having this show.
And so to you. Bye.
You're welcome.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.